You're listening to the Dungeons, Dragons, and Psychology Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Dungeons, Dragons, and Psychology Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Walker. In today's session, I'm joined by my friend and fellow role player, Kimothy. We're going to be covering one of my most favorite aspects of a great game, and that is compelling villains. So welcome to the show, Kimothy.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So can you tell me some of your favorite moments from games that you've been in that are particularly related to great villains?
Yes. Many of my characters actually have all been victims of your specific villains. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
That's happened quite a few times. One of the most particular ones that I remember, playing a paladin, of course, and just the moral quandary that comes along with it is part of the reason why I love paladins. But stories of this god king that is ruling this nation with such an iron fist that there are droughts everywhere, and just the machinations of this evil person, and we're in his castle. I can't even remember why now. This game's only, what, probably 3-4 years old. I can't even remember why. But you turned down the lights in a particular moment, and the jump scare as my character turns around and finds this man who she's only heard stories of, she's never actually even seen before, in front of her, and that being where the session ends. Fantastic storytelling.
So, one of the things that really lends itself well to dramatic moments in games are the environment that you're playing in. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big part of creating an experience for players is setting the mood, right? So music is always a great one. Dimming the lights is one that I've used habitually in games to set dark themes into motion.
Mm-hmm. There's a reason why we invested in thousands of dollars of lights for the game room.
Oh, it makes a huge difference when you can change the color of your entire room to the kind of setting that your characters are in. Mm-hmm. It makes a huge difference in putting yourself in an immersive state for playing a game.
Agreed. But to even go further than that, talking about villains and why we specifically were going to do this, this conversation, learning about this, I'm going to use the term gentleman very loosely. Learning about this gentleman from a place of my character and even just her journey, because this character ended up foregoing all of her tenets of paladinhood, ended up falling, ended up turning on her party all to save her son, who she had with this villain. Mm-hmm. And ended up being in a space actually where she was then rescued by her son later. Fantastic story.
I think, like you're talking about, falling from grace as a paladin, and in particular, that's a theme I really like.
We've done it a few times.
Particularly with villains, though. I mean, we've done it in-game as characters, and we've kind of been through that whole process. But I really like it as the perspective of a villain, because the way I look at most villains is they're the heroes of their own story.
Yes.
Right? They typically aren't going to look at themselves and think of themselves that they are the villain. Mm-hmm. They think that they're taking the actions to be the hero of the story as the way they see it. Mm-hmm. So I do like that sort of understanding the villain from that point of view, in terms of, yes, if I had followed their path, I might have made those same decisions. I could have been the villain just as easily as they're the villain.
We've talked about this a few different times, where the slippery slope of being evil is just that. It is very slippery. And you talk about one choice leads to another. Well, if this is reasonable, the next step is just as reasonable, mm-hmm. because I've already made one choice and that one made sense at that time. Why wouldn't I continue in that space? Which is why villains that don't see themselves as evil are my favorite, especially when written well.
And maybe some of them do eventually see themselves as evil. Maybe mm-hmm. they don't. But I do think that there's always a justification for their actions. I think that's an important part of a good villain, is they need to be able to justify to themselves why they're taking the actions that they're taking.
There's plenty of great examples of that. I think of the book that I keep going back and reading all the time of, it's a book of fiction of religion, and the main villain is actually a man that sees science as taking people from his religion. And so he creates a situation where science is ending religion to make people believe again.
That sounds like an interesting idea for a campaign.
Actually. Right. Exactly. So you have like this person that, in all honesty, he sees himself as the savior of his religion.
Right.
But to the protagonist of the book, he is most certainly the person that is destroying everything that this scientist believes in. So you have two people that are completely at odds that actually see each other as villains. But in all honesty, between the two of them, are they actually villains? Or are they just doing exactly what they think is most crucial for them at that moment?
I like that. I think for me, there's a couple of things I always think about when I'm trying to write a villain. And one of them is I want them to be able to be understood by the characters. So I think not just having the bad guy at the end and they will kind of understand the things he's doing, but sprinkling pieces of their story throughout your entire campaign so that as the game progresses, you understand the villain to a greater and greater extent.
Yes.
So by the time you get to the end, you really get why they're a bad guy. It's not just, oh, they're evil and we have to stop them to save the world. No, you understand. And I get why they made these decisions. They're just not the right decisions they should have made.
Well, or even they're not the decisions that I would have made.
Right.
And I think that that's the biggest difference between the two is you can even see yourself, especially with a good villain, you can see yourself in that same spot where they are if something had just changed along the way. And I love exploring that.
Well, I do like that idea. I've tried to build some of my villains so close to the characters that the characters themselves would think, I probably would be the villain if I had lived his life. And I think that that's a pretty powerful tool because he realizes that maybe it wasn't just him being bad. It was just the circumstances that he was born into or that he had to live through. And I think that makes it a lot harder to pull the trigger when it comes time to kill the villain. Like maybe it sends him on a different kind of an arc. Do they want to go on a redemption arc instead of a just kill the bad guy at the end of the story arc?
There's been plenty of times that we've sat around the table and you have the moral quandary of what do I do with this person after you understand their motivations? There's plenty of times where we've argued as players for hours and that becomes our session of what do we do at this point? All because you understand I could have been that person. I could have been the one that did that.
Well, and I think that point of saying sometimes the villain's right as well.
Oddly enough, yes. Right.
And I think of there's some great examples that I like to think of that they're right, but they're right in definitely the wrong way. One of my favorite villains is Mr. Glass from the Unbreakable series. Obviously, very, very mentally disturbed, but he was seeking to discover if, because he was so weak, if the universe created somebody who would be his opposite, super strong. And he was right about it. He ended up finding out that yeah, it's true. The universe balances itself out. So it was this weird, yeah, he killed so many people, but he also proved his point that the universe creates its own balance. So it was a really unique kind of aspect there.
You have, I'm a big book reader, if that's not apparent, but you also have another fantastic series written by a fantastic author that, to your point, the villain is the person that's actually holding the world together. In the end, and you don't discover this for a book and a half.
You must be talking about the Mistborn trilogy.
Yes, yeah, exactly. That's sure. Exactly it. You don't even know that, spoiler alert, you don't even know that he's actually the one that's holding everything together. And you discover this far too late after he's already dead. And now you're trying to figure out, okay, what am I going to do with this power? And how do I replicate everything and keep things in line, but how do I not become the villain at the same time? And it's this fantastic journey of the characters of discovering this.
Yeah, I think that is a really interesting story in particular, because as you get to the main characters having this realization that, yeah, he was portrayed or he seemed to be this really horrible, evil individual, but really he saved us all. So it is kind of a unique perspective where in hindsight, the good guys are realizing, well, maybe we weren't really so good.
What did I do? And that question is always fun as a player when you come against it.
Another particularly interesting one, more recent, is Thanos from the Marvel Universe.
Yes.
And I think that's another one where he's not wrong about his concept.
No.
There are limited resources on limited worlds that are habitable, and overpopulation destroys the longevity of life. Mm-hmm. Probably didn't go about it the best way.
No.
But he wasn't inaccurate in his judgments.
No. And frankly, you even see that in history of the world. There are people that have had exactly the same thoughts. And do we brand them as villains in current history? Yeah.
I mean, we definitely do. And I think that maybe the big disparity between the villain and the hero is that the villain takes emotion out of the equation in a lot of ways. They're not tied to everybody having the life that they're living right now. Mm-hmm. They're willing to wreck other people's happiness in order to favor what they see as the greater good.
Look at how easily Thanos killed Gamora.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. His own kid.
His own kid.
So I do want to talk about one villain in particular that I know there's a lot of debate out there about whether or not he was a good villain, and that's Kylo Ren. And in my mind, he is one of the best written villains that has ever existed. And I'm not saying that because I think that The Force Awakens or any of the new Star Wars movies were all that great, but the concept was so unique. Mm-hmm. Here you have a villain who knows he's a villain and is struggling to eliminate the goodness from himself rather than struggling because he has darkness in himself. They completely flipped the script on what it means to be a villain, and I thought that was really unique.
So this is where your jaw's going to drop. I haven't watched any of the other Star Wars movies after the first one where we were introduced to Kylo Ren. But I spoil myself and I go watch everything and I read everything. But I agree with you. Like, there is something about someone that embraces it at the same time, because you have your villains in D&D. We have our classic villains of, they're seen as evil for evil's sake. But for what purpose? Mm-hmm. And that's where Kylo Ren turns that on its head. His purpose is to embrace that evil.
Right.
And what is his goal with it? Or what is he going to do with it? That's story for another time. But he's not in a space where he can even be turned from that. But you always have someone that you always feel like you can go and, okay, I'm going to roll a diplomacy check and I'm going to make sure that he sees my way about this. Mm-hmm. No, there's not another option for him.
Right.
And that's almost beautiful.
Well, and I do think that the argument can be made in terms of Kylo Ren's character, that he understands that he is the villain, but he also thinks that villainy is the only path to a united empire.
Yes.
So for him to make that succeed, he has to purge all sense of goodness from his soul and is left with just utter evil.
What an interesting concept to say, who is the most evil and what are you doing to show that? Mm-hmm. Because we always talk, you have the most good, right? You have your exalted good.
Right.
But what about the most evil?
Well, definitely it was probably a character I played, that's for sure.
Also, that was a great campaign too. If you haven't played a campaign where everybody's evil, make sure they're all lawful evil.
Oh, yeah.
Make sure they have like someone that they're beholden to. But goodness, that's a fantastic campaign.
Yeah, I agree with that. And your point about lawful evil, it's evil games, of course, are harder to keep on the rails just because there's not that sense of innate morality that drives the characters and keeps them together. So you at least want to have something that's going to bind them together, be that they have a unified purpose or they're connected in some way. You have to have a way to keep them cohesive as a unit. Otherwise, you're just running, you know, four different games simultaneously.
Right. Well, you have the lawful evil of I have a code, I'm going to follow it. But then also having someone that they're beholden to as a group at the same time, that's the key for your lawful evil person, because they're going to follow this person that is obviously ahead of them in the pecking order. But villain, quote unquote, villains as PCs is a fantastic idea that I know you've used before. Mm-hmm. I know you've mentioned it in your book too. And being a part of that game, that was a fantastic moment as well. I debated which one was the one that I was going to highlight earlier, but there is something to be said about that moral quandary, even around the table, having also played an evil character recently, of how do I interact with other people that I'm trying to manipulate, mm-hmm. and what do I want out of them and how do I get that out of them?
Moral quandaries is fun.
It is.
It's interesting because it gives you a chance to reflect about how you really feel about mm-hmm. things in the real world. Mm-hmm. And I think in some ways it helps you cement your values mm-hmm. in life. And I think we all need to play an evil character sometimes just so that we can look at ourselves and go, I'm glad I'm not that guy.
I'm glad I'm not evil because, oh my goodness, if I don't care, then that's a problem.
So do you have any villains that you think were particularly poorly written in cinema or literature? Any of them that stand out to you? I mean, I know I have a couple examples of ones that I think were just way too simple.
Okay, let's hear yours.
Okay, so the one that immediately springs to mind is Dormammu from the first Doctor Strange film.
Okay.
Like, he's this entity from another world who shows up in like the last 5 minutes of the movie with really no explanation. And that's it. Like, he's going to destroy the world, but we don't know why. He has no motivation other than he's going to just destroy the world. And fortunately, Doctor Strange's character is incredibly clever and handles it in a cool way that makes the movie feel awesome.
Right.
But the villain itself was just like, but why?
I think he missed out on the payoff portion of the interaction in that case. You're right. He is very one-dimensional. There's no real reason for him to be there. There was definitely other people that could have been shouldered mm-hmm. to as opposed to him. But the payoff wasn't there. And especially as a theater goer, that was the hard part.
And I think for me, the other one that's always gotten me is in the reboot of Star Trek. The enemy Nero, which was the main enemy from the first film that they rebooted.
Yeah.
Eric Bana did a really good job of portraying the character, but there was no depth to him and it did not make sense. And I think the enemy story, the villain story, has got to make sense. Mm-hmm. So when he went back in time and sat around waiting for 30 years to kill the guy who destroyed his planet with the tools that he had to save his
planet at the same time.
He could have gone right to Romulan and solved the problem before it ever happened. Like, it didn't make any sense.
I think you have to be a real Trekkie to kind of understand his story, but I think that his story lacked the depth that we generally see. If you understand why he felt the way he did or what his family actually meant to him, then that was a different story. But you had to be me or like me and have had like 18 years of watching Star Trek with my mother. Hi, Mom. To have that. So you're right. The payoff in that one was very one dimensional. It wasn't something that was worthwhile. It was nice to watch.
Yeah. And not to take away from the film, because it was excellent.
It was great movie.
The scenes were great. The characters were great.
And all those lens flares.
It just, in that sense, specifically speaking about writing, I just thought that it wasn't written in a way that made sense.
Give to me the story. Depth.
Right. Yeah. Depth for mm-hmm. sure. Anything that makes the character more dynamic, mm-hmm. not one dimensional. They've got reasons for doing what they're doing. They've got hopes, expectations, dreams, goals. Like, they have all the same things that a player character has. Mm-hmm. They're just not the player character.
So something that was interesting in terms of feedback that I was given at one point was, write your villains from the end to the beginning. Mm-hmm. What's your end goal for them? What's the end game for them? And then take that back. How did they get there? Assume the players are going to interfere, because nothing ever manages to survive when the players interact with it. But then go even further back from that. And this is where I think you do really well in your villains, is that you're writing the entirety of the story. It's not just anything of, it's this person in time. It's not someone that just randomly shows up. It is a person that has had motivations from beginning to end. And when the players interact with them, now all of a sudden those motivations might change. They might ignite. They might become even more important to them. So now how do they react to that? And all of a sudden you don't just have this one-dimensional person that's, I'm evil for evil's sake. It is, I am a person that is interacting in this world that has motivations and a clear goal, and I'm working against someone mm-hmm. or I'm working for something else other than what you are. And that's fantastic writing in a villain.
So I mentioned this in previous episodes, and yeah, you definitely bring it up, right? Writing backwards and then moving forward from there, uh-huh. I think is an excellent way to build. And it works particularly well for villains because you can easily figure out where they are at the point where they're ready to destroy the world or bring down a nation or do whatever big, bad, evil thing that they're doing. But then writing backwards and figuring out how the heck did they get there?
How did they get there? Yeah. That's the fun part.
It is fun. And I've said it before that I think the most important pieces of writing that you're ever going to do in a game, whether you're as a player or as your DM, are backstories. Mm-hmm. And if you're a player, obviously your character backstory is super important. If you're a DM, it's your important NPCs and it's your main bad guy. Those are the most important things that you're going to write, is how everything got to be what it is today.
Agreed.
Okay, let's go into tricks of the trade. All right, in today's tricks of the trade, we have three ideas each for unique villains. Feel free to borrow these ideas for your own stories or make them better. My first idea for a villain is the duplicate. I like the idea of a multiverse style game where the main villain that your parties have to face is themselves from another plane of existence. They made different choices than the party that led them down the path of darkness. And I think it's really cool if you use your character's backstories when you're making this villain. Save the writing of your villain until you actually have your character's backstories so that you can identify points where they made different decisions than your characters did. And I also really like the idea of don't let your characters know that that's who they're facing until the very end. Give it a plot twist.
I love that. And it gives more depth for, there you go, depth for the players too, because it's so easy. Sometimes you're like, oh, I'm one point in space. No, you actually have something that was built off of you. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden you're a part of this world and you have a reason for being there. So my first idea was around nature versus nurture. We talk a lot about this, especially as moms and in psychology. So you have someone from the PC's past that they thought was a friend that actually has been the nefarious mind behind whatever's going on. Mm-hmm. Why are they working against a friend, and what caused them to be this way? What changed when you have two kids growing up together and they split? What changed, and why is this person the way they are now?
I like that. So they could maybe even be a significant connection to one of your players, mm-hmm. a brother, a sister, or just a close friend, yeah. Or it could be somebody who was maybe a mentor or a guide, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, my next idea is the prophet killer, I'm going to call it. And in this idea, your players are in a world where prophecy is pretty well known. Perhaps it's even archived in like a kingdom library. And the villain is a true believer in the importance of prophecy. Specifically, they feel like they have to steer the world towards certain branches of prophecy, which means that they must take it upon themselves to enact prophesized events, particularly the really apocalyptic ones.
Okay, interesting. I feel like you and I are sharing a brain cell, because my second one was kind of along those same lines.
Oh,
a little
no.
bit different, a little bit different. So a member of a good aligned church who has been brought up with prophecy, and it's been interpreted this one way this whole time, they believe that they actually have the correct interpretation of it, and it's different. So they act on this. And while everybody else still believes in this one way that this prophecy is interpreted, they begin to act on their own interpretation of this prophecy. Are they wrong? And what if they're right? Mm-hmm. And what if things start going in their direction?
So it kind of pulls into the idea of like the heretics that they introduced in some of that. That's a fun one. I like that a lot. Okay, my last idea, I'm going to call this the collector.
Okay.
In this one, the villain believes that the primary god in the world has died, and they are on a desperate journey to replace God before the world unravels. So this would-be God believes that the only way to become powerful enough to take one's place in the divine is by collecting inherited templates, where creatures, vampires, liches, paragons, they're trying to get every source of inheritable power that they can so they become this supreme god.
Okay, I just cringed in my chair. Please don't ever put that up against me at the table.
Got bad news for our next game then.
Oh gosh. Okay, so my next one, this is a motif that I've always enjoyed, and we don't get to play it enough, but like good aligned undead. There's plenty of great examples of it. But good aligned undead working against their nature, and what everyone expects them to be is obviously not what they actually are. Their motivations are misunderstood and maybe even taken advantage of by other people. Hey, this necromancer's over here, but this lich is actually good for whatever reason, God or whatever the case is. So what causes them to snap and actually become evil?
Fascinating. So you take the trope of like the elven deathless, the elven guardian undead, and then all of a sudden they're evil instead of good.
Right. So they should be good. Or even Evening Glory and the fantastic stories of her and from third edition D&D. And you have obviously these temples that are built, but they're filled with undead that are nefariously evil, but they traditionally wouldn't be.
That's interesting. So it flips it. It flips the script a little bit on what they know about good undead, and then it's going to make the characters, the players, ask the questions of, well, is it just something that is inherently in their nature?
Right.
And they could no longer fight against it? Fascinating. Okay, that brings us to the end of this session. A huge thank you, Kimothy. Thank you for joining me. And please subscribe to the podcast. Check out my book, Session Zero, the DMG to Writing Great Campaigns in Any System. It's available on Amazon, and there's a link in the show notes. And feel free to email me if you have any suggestions, comments, or ideas for future shows. The address is all one word, dungeonsdragonspsychology@gmail.com. Next week, we'll have a new person in store for you. We're going to be talking with Keegan and discussing the experience of being a new player in an experienced group. So that'll be a good episode if you are joining a D&D group for the first time. See you next session.